At this time, Ms. Rand will entertain questions from the audience because of the academic purpose of her appearance here tonight. We ask that questions come only from cadets here at the Academy. The cadets who are moving up into the audience area now have microphones. They will pass the microphone to you, and when you are indicated, please stand up and ask your question. Now's the time to find out if your P really gave you the right grade on that thing. Except for my students. I'll be watching. First question.
Cadet Greaves, Company E1. Mr. Rand, as you pointed out, the history of philosophy is marked by disagreement in the conclusions of the philosophers. Many of these men, including Kant, used logical processes to arrive at their conclusions. How can we be sure that by using logical analysis and reason that we can arrive at any kind of satisfactory conclusion or any conclusion at all?
To begin with, even if the whole world agreed about everything or disagreed about everything, that would not mean anything nor prove anything about your own use of logic. The mere agreement on everybody on an idea, or the fact that there are ideas on which men cannot agree, does not prove that all of those men were either logical or honest. You cannot take that fact on faith about anyone. What will prove which philosophy you consider true is your own conscientious use of logic. And it's not a guaranteed process in the sense that you're not infallible. It is up to you to learn how to use logic, how to reason, and then you will know what to accept. If you make a mistake, the very mistake will give you a chance to correct your error and to learn more. But outside of your reason and your logic, you do not have any means of knowing anything. But if you conclude that, well, man can know nothing, you would have to look around you and be refuted instantly, because you can see how far man has come, and he had to have knowledge in order to get where he is today. In fact, in order to even arrive at your question, you had to have knowledge. Therefore, man can know something. Then you have to conclude what are the means. Without logic, you will not be able to do it. The sole judge of what is logical is yourself. Only you cannot force your judgment on others, and therefore if you err, the penalty will be yours. But as to Kant, there can't even be a presumption of innocence about him. His system is so consistently wrong and so illogical that mistakes of that size cannot be made accidentally. His is a very calculated system for one purpose only: destroy man's mind. Everything in his system is subordinated to that end, and in that sense he's logical, if you wish, just like a criminal is logical in his limited undertaking.
Ms. Rand, I was under the impression that both you and Emerson were champions of individualism, I was somewhat surprised at your comment concerning his very small mind. Would you care to comment?
I'm glad you asked that question. Individualism is not a philosophical nor even a political primary. Individualism is a concept which, in order to be valid, has to depend on a philosophical, epistemological, metaphysical base which is valid. Emerson was an arch enemy of reason. He was what's called a transcendentalist, I believe, which is a variant of European romantic philosophy. I don't mean romantic literature now, it's something totally different. Romantic philosophy, which worshipped the will as against reason, which I call simply emotion worshipping. Emerson believed in all kind of forms of supernatural mysticism, and he was an enemy of reason. Now, I am primarily and first and foremost a defender of reason, not of individualism, not of capitalism. I defend capitalism because I'm a defender of individualism, but I defend individualism only because I'm a defender or a champion of reason. That is my epistemological base. Emerson contradicts it. Now, I do not believe that a man has the right to do anything he pleases. I don't believe it, and nature doesn't believe it. If he runs amok in dealing with nature and acts on his whims, nature will destroy him very quickly. The state doesn't have to interfere. Nobody has to forbid him. He can act and think like an Emerson if he wants to, but it is contrary to reality and to reason. Therefore, I would not want ever to be confused with a thinker like Emerson or another one who is much, much greater mind, but with whom I don't want to be associated, and that is Nietzsche. Nietzsche also advocated individualism, and he wrote some very beautiful things, literarily beautiful, in defense of the individual, but he was a mystic metaphysically. He regarded Dionysius, the god of unknowable emotions, above Apollo, the god of reason. He believed in what I call a malevolent universe, that reality is really set against man, but the Superman will act somehow against reality, in effect, even though he has no chance to win, and will trample over everybody else for his selfish end. What's his selfish end? Blank out. Nietzsche has never told us what is the proper morality of selfishness, but he said he's beyond good and evil. Well, you see, I don't believe that selfishness consists of sacrificing others to yourself. And I don't believe that it consists of altruism, which is sacrificing yourself to others. I don't believe that man is a sacrificial animal. I don't believe that sacrifices are practical, one way or another, although the self-sacrificing that this country is going through today is unspeakable. That's your altruist morality in full political flower. But my morality begins with dropping the idea that men are in reason and in nature enemies of each other. The interests of rational men do not clash, and therefore I do not agree with Nietzsche about a superman and an inferior man. I believe every man should be free and is entitled to whichever he can earn, provided he doesn't get it by means of physical force. And if his values and his ideas are not good, only he will suffer. That's his choice. But no man has the right to rule another man, and no man has the right to demand any man's sacrifice. That's the difference between me and Nietzsche. So that if you really want to compare me to anyone, there is only one philosopher who is my base, whose influence I admit and proudly, and that is Aristotle. That, as even there, I do not agree with everything, particularly not with his cosmology. But then cosmology is not a proper part of philosophy. I don't agree with the certain Platonic influences which are shown in some of his works, but I agree with all his essential points. And so if you want to pigeonhole me, all right, I'll be proud, and it will be an honor to belong to the same class as Aristotle, but nobody else in philosophy.
Ma'am, at the risk of stating an unpopular view, when you were speaking of America, I couldn't help but think of the cultural genocide of Native Americans, the enslavement of black men in this country, and the relocation of Japanese Americans during World War II. How do you account for all this in your view of America?
I missed your first part of the sentence when you said, the cultural genesis of America.
Genocide of Native Americans.
To begin with, there is much more to America than the issue of racism. I do not believe that the issue of races or even the persecution of a particular race is as important as the persecution of individuals. Because when you deprive individuals of rights, if you deprive any small group, all individuals lose their rights. Therefore, look at it fundamentally. If you're concerned with minorities, the smallest minority on earth is an individual. If you do not respect individual rights, you will sacrifice or persecute all minorities, and then you'll get to the same treatment given to a majority, which you can observe today in Soviet Russia. But if you ask me, well, now, should America have tolerated slavery? I would say certainly not. And why did they? Well, at the time of the Constitutional Convention, or the debates about the Constitution, the best theoreticians at the time wanted to abolish slavery right then and there, and they should have. The fact is that they compromised with other members of the debate, and that compromise has caused this country a dreadful catastrophe, which had to happen, and that is the Civil War. You could not have a slavery existing in a country which proclaims the inalienable rights of men. If you believe in the rights, and the institution of slavery is an enormous contradiction. It is to the honor of this country, which the haters of America never mentioned, that people died giving their life in order to abolish slavery. There was that much strong philosophical feeling about it. Certainly slavery was a contradiction, but before you criticize this country, remember that that is a remnant of the politics and the philosophies of Europe and of the rest of the world. The black slaves were sold into slavery by in many cases by other black tribes. Slavery is something which only the United States of America abolished. Historically, there was no such concept as the right of the individual. The United States is based on that concept. So that so long as men held to the American political philosophies, they had to come to the point even of a civil war, but of eliminating the contradiction with which they could not live, namely the institution of slavery. Incidentally, if you study history, following America's example, slavery or serfdom was abolished in the whole civilized world during the 19th century. What abolished it? Not altruism, not any kind of collectivism, capitalism. The world of free trade could not coexist with slave labor. And countries like Russia, which was the most backward and has had serfs, liberated them without any pressure from anyone by economic necessity. Nobody could compete with America economically so long as they attempted to use slave labor. Now that was the liberating influence of America. That's in regard to the slavery of black people. But as to the example of the Japanese people, you mean the labor camps in California? Well, that was certainly not put over by any sort of defender of capitalism or Americanism. That was done by the left-wing progressive liberal Democrats of Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Kennett Boardman and Company, C4. Miss Rand?
Oh, genocide? Huh? I'm not sure. Would you excuse me a moment? My friend here points out to me that I didn't pick up another point of your statement or your question because I had to answer you such lengths. I was aware of that. You mean the word genocide? American Indians.
Did you mention the American Indians in your question also as one of the groups? Okay, do you want to address yourself to that also?
Yes, because if you study reliable history and not liberal, racist newspaper, racism didn't exist in this country until the liberals brought it up. Racism in the sense of self-consciousness and separation about races. Yes, slavery existed as a very evil institution. And there certainly was prejudice against some minorities, including the Negroes, after they were liberated. But those prejudices were dying out under the pressure of pre-economics, because racism, in the prejudicial sense, doesn't pay. Then if anyone wants to be a racist, he suffers. The workings of the system is against him. Today, it is to everyone's advantage to form some kind of ethnic collective. The people who share your viewpoint or from whose philosophy those catchphrases come are the ones who are institutionalizing racism today. What about the quotas in employment, the quotas in education? And I hope to God, so I'm not religious, but just to express my feeling, that the Supreme Court will rule against those quotas. But if you can understand the vicious contradiction and injustice of establishing racism by law, whether it's in favor of a minority or a majority, doesn't matter. It's more offensive when it's in the name of a minority, because it can only be done in order to disarm and destroy the majority in the whole country. It can only create more racist divisions and backlashes and racist feelings. If you're opposed to racism, you should support individualism. You cannot oppose racism on one hand and one collectivism on the other. But now as to the Indians, I don't even care to discuss that kind of alleged complaints that they have against this country. I do believe, with serious scientific reasons, the worst kind of movie that you have probably seen, worst from the Indian viewpoint, as to what they did to the white men. I do not think that they have any right to live in a country merely because they were born here and acted and lived like savages. Americans did not conquer that country. Whoever is making sounds there, I think is hissing that he's right, but please be consistent. You are a racist if you are object to that. You are that because you believe that anything can be given to man by his biological birth or for biological reasons. If you're born in a magnificent country which you don't know what to do with, you believe that that's a property right. It is not. And since the Indians did not have any property rights, they didn't have the concept of property. They didn't even have a settled societies. They were predominantly nomadic tribes. They were a primitive tribal culture, if you want to call it that. If so, they didn't have any rights to the land, and there was no reason for anyone to grant them rights which they had not conceived and were not using. It would be wrong to attack any country which does respect, or tribe for that matter, that respects individual rights. Because if they do, you are an aggressor and you're morally wrong if you attack them. But if a country does not protect rights, if a given tribe is the slave of its own tribal chief, why should you respect the rights they do not have? Or any country which has a dictatorship, government, the citizens still have individual rights, but the country does not have any rights. Anyone has the right to invade it, because rights are not recognized in this country, and you, neither you, nor a country, nor anyone can have your cake and eat it too. In other words, want respect for the rights of Indians, who incidentally, for most cases of their tribal history, made agreements with the white men, and then when they had used up whichever they got through the agreement of giving, selling certain territory, then came back and broke the agreements and attacked white settlements. I would go further. Let's say that, let's suppose they were all beautifully innocent savages, which they certainly were not. What was it that they were fighting for if they opposed white men on this continent? For their wish to continue a primitive existence, their right to keep part of the earth untouched, unused, and not even a property, but just keep everybody out so that you will live practically like an animal, or maybe a few caves above it. Any white person who brings the element of civilization have the right to take over this country. And it is great that some people did and discovered here what they couldn't do anywhere else in the world, and what the Indians, if there are any racist Indians today, do not believe to this day, in respect for individual rights. I am incidentally in favor of Israel against the Arabs for the very same reason. There you have the same issue in reverse. Israel is not a good country politically. It's a mixed economy leaning strongly to socialism. But why do the Arabs resent it? Because it is a wedge of civilization, an industrial wedge, in part of a continent which is totally primitive and nomadic. Israel is being attacked for being civilized, and being specifically a technological society. It's for that very reason that they should be supported, that they are morally right, because they represent the progress of men's minds, just as the white settlers of America represented the progress of the mind, not centuries of brute stagnation and superstition. They represented the banner of the mind, and they were in the right.
Gentlemen, we have time for just one more brief question and response on perhaps a more eclectic note.
Cadet Whitman Company, C4. Ms. Rand, I was wondering, in your novel, Atlas Shrugged, you seem to portray a very strong attitude towards the feminine, the female sex, and you also said that I got the idea that the relationship between a man and a woman should be more or less on a business-like attitude and going away from sex, except on a completely necessary basis. I was wondering if you thought that
I missed a part of your sentence there. What did you say?
You came across to me as portraying an attitude of respect, a feeling of respect between a man and a woman. I was wondering if you thought that a man and a woman should experience the emotion of love.
You know, I don't think you finished reading it for sure.
Ms. Rand, you have certainly given us a night an example of a major engagement in philosophy.
in the wake of which you have left a long list of casualties, and have tossed and gored several sacred cows.
I hope so.
I think, however, at the same time, that most of us would agree that you have given us an object lesson in the importance of philosophical reflection about these kinds of problems in order to arrive at a rational consistency. Ms. Rand, in writing Atlas Shrugged, made one remark that I thought was important to us when she said that the only proper purpose of a government is to protect man's rights, and the only proper functions of a government are the police, to protect our property at home, the law, to protect our rights and contracts, and the army, to protect us from foreign threats. And we appreciate your coming to the home of the Army tonight to address us. Thank you.
Thank you.
For additional information about other available programs, please contact Second Renaissance at 1-800-729-6149 or at www.ayanrandbookstore.com. All material in this program is protected by copyright and may not be reproduced in any form or manner, nor played before an audience, without the express written permission of the producer, Second Renaissance Incorporated.